Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Poema podcast. I am James Prescott, your host. Welcome to the show. Great to have you all here again, and I am delighted to welcome back our returning guest. Someone who makes things. I think that's what Rob likes to call himself. Someone who makes things. And Rob, Rob is here to talk about his new book. Which is called, I'm going to read the whole title, Where Do You Park Your Spaceship? An Interplanetary Tale of Love, Loss and Bread. Book one, Welcome to Thirdus. So it's book one, it's going to be more, which is exciting. I love the title, I love it. And it's a novel, it's a 550-page novel, and I could not adequately describe what it's about in a paragraph at all. It's about everything. I love it. We're going to talk about that today. So, I remember reading your last kind of book, because you've written a couple of plays. I know you've written a couple of plays. One of which is by a character in the novel, which I think is brilliant. It's just brilliant. And we'll get to that. But everything is spiritual. When I read that, I felt intuitively that was the end of a season.
You are the first person who've said that. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, other people have pointed that out. It's nice to have other people tell me about myself. It's almost, you know what I mean? It's like I'm trying to stay awake and aware and sort of understand what's happening here, and apparently I'm missing out on all kinds of things, which is thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just something about. I just felt like this is my final. This is my final word to all of you. Like, this is what I'm leaving you with, and I'm going on to something else. Like it was. So I was quite happy. I was sad and happy at the end of that book because I was like, we're not going to get any more books like this, but we're going to get loads of other great stuff, and I can't wait for that. And I had no idea what it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was really excited about what was going to come, even though I had no idea what it was.
And then when you saw the. Where'd you park your spaceship? Was there like, did James Prescott say to James Prescott, I knew it. I did not see this, but I knew it was, you did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I absolutely. I was not surprised by it. Like, but I was happy, you know, I was like, it's just this, there's this energy in the novel, which is, it's got this kind of heaviness and lightness at the same time. Like this kind of lightness in that I'm doing something that I just because I love doing it and I'm just enjoying doing this. But there's this, like every so often in the novel, there's like there's moments of like great depth and like you can tell there's like learned wisdom from life and grief and things like it's which I've never had in a, I don't really read fiction much, you see, like, but this, it was compelling. So that was how I felt about when I was reading this.
I'm struck with how you create a world on a bunch of other planets in the future. So sometime in some other place, these worlds are structured economically, politically, socially in these very different ways than our world. And so you get hundreds of pages of like taking you into all of these worlds. And oddly enough, every interview and every person who wants to talk about the book, it's about their own love, loss, grief, hope, granular questions about new economic arrangements for the world. So how fascinating. And like those earlier books, which were me saying, like, this is what I'm saying. Here's me saying it a different way. Here's an example of it. Just in case you were fuzzy, here's what I just said, only slightly differently. Do you know what I mean? Like straight down the middle, this is what I mean. And then oftentimes I'd be interacting like in an interview and it'd be sort of over here and over here. And I'd be like, no, I'm talking about this world right now. And they'd be like, but what happens? And then... you get to this book, which is some other times another place, and it's so many people are like, yeah, this is your most personal book yet. this is so personal. It's like so vulnerable and personal. I'm like, it is.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's so mysterious how this all works.
I mean, my other favorite book of yours is Millones Cajones. I have the hard copy of that. Like, and I love all your books, but these two are kind of the most profound. I remember reading Millones Cajones and like wanting to read that book that the character in there talks about. I can't remember.
Sabbath. It's like a book about a book.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, and that, so it was just, and that felt true as well. Like that felt a true story, but just told in fiction. I mean, this doesn't feel like a true story, but obviously because it's set in space and in the future and things. But there feels like lived experience and in there. Yeah, absolutely.
It's fascinating. I swear I don't know anything. I have no idea how it works now.
So when you were writing, when you came to start writing this, where did it all come from then? This sounds like it just, because it feels like it was just a stream of consciousness which just became something. Like, yes. What was it? Is that basically what it was?
Middle of the night, halfway between fast asleep and wide awake, sort of lucid. And a guy is asking this guy, where'd you park your spaceship? And I remember in the middle of the night being like, well, how does that guy feel about being asked that question? And just instantly, oh, he does not like this question. Oh, this question deeply unsettles him. It does. Why is that? Well, first off, spaceship. So are they even on Earth? And in the middle of the night, I'm interviewing me about, you see what I mean? Like instantly it was entirely absurd. And perhaps I just am slow and it takes a minute to catch on, but it came in with such force. And I remember in the morning making some notes on like this little pad of paper, kind of a don't forget the eggs little pad of paper you have in your clothes closet. And then all of a sudden a day later it's like, well, what's the one guy's name? Well, Keen Gruber's obviously. What's the other guy's name? Dill Tud. Yeah. Of course. So it was there.
Wow.
And then there was a moment of, wait, this is book one. Because I could see where we needed to go. And then what you referenced earlier, I distinctly remember the moment when the character Nord writes a play and thinking, well, what's the name of the play? Oh, What's a Nucca? Well, I've already written that play and published it. And that's when it was like, okay, that's so ridiculous. You're like, just double down. Don't even fight it. Just don't. All the cool kids are rolling their eyes and it's okay. It was like these moments of permission to just go all in that I had to keep like giving myself. Yeah. It was a very tender, like sort of vulnerable, just be true to it. And almost like a too good to be true, which I've come to London and given workshops on creativity and cynicism, and
yeah,
that's the trap in all this, is you like go around the world talking about this, and then I needed help more than anybody I've ever talked to just like not feel like an imposter and
yeah,
trust it and just go with it and see where it wanted to take me. Yeah, it was it's quite an experience.
Wow. Well, it feels like that. It feels like that when you read it. It comes, it's only, there's a lot of, I remember certainly in the first part of the book, Heen is like, he's kind of on this kind of voyage of discovery. He's like all these new things that he's never, that we all know, that we've all lived, that we're living in right now. You know, how the world works, all the systems that we work, how people behave, how people ignore things that are going on right in front of them. And he's discovering all this like for the first time, like as like an outsider or someone in the future who's looking back. You know, things always look different in hindsight. Or when you're seeing them from somebody else's perspective for the first time, you know. And obviously, I was already aware of these things myself, but like there are many people who read it who weren't. And it's like when you look at it that way, it's a completely different. almost like a childlike sense of discovery. Yeah. Like,
I remember the first moment talking about the Earth as a distant thing that once was. Even the little bits and pieces of Earth that seem to still be around, I just found that to be very powerful to write about the Earth that was and how he doesn't even know why some of these stories about the Earth move him. Which just was that experience of being in a completely different place in time, looking back. Yeah, all of it. It just endlessly was interesting to me. It still is.
Yeah. Yeah. I did find myself going back and rereading certain bits of the book because it was just giving me a bit of a moment to pause. You know, even when you're aware of what's going on around you and how the world is and what's really going on, seeing it from somebody else's perspective for the first time is always a moment to pause.
You think about it when you ask somebody, what's it like to be you? That's often the most fascinating question you can possibly conjure up. How many times a person will tell you what it's like to be them and you had no idea? You had no idea what they'd been through or what a particular experience, how they experienced that event. It's fascinating. It's like the distance between our interiors is unbelievable. And stories are like how we bridge it.
Absolutely. I always felt like story metaphor is a really good tool. Is kind of the best tool actually to help people understand difficult concepts. You know, rather than just kind of the academic knowledge, like you can learn information, but you might not internalize it. Or you might not know how that feels. But when you read it in a story and you see how it's affecting people in the story, it becomes real. It becomes emotive.
You make up a story to get at the real.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I love movies.
Yeah. You know. Because it's real in some sort of way that's very hard to explain.
Yeah, absolutely. How many books or movies have shifted public consciousness on major issues because the story is so powerful? And you don't get academic books doing that as much. You know? No. So
very true.
And I love story. One other thing, I've written a lot of stuff as well. And I know that when you create something, it normally has an impact on you as you're creating it. And you're always a different person at the end of it. So how is creating this world, this universe, this set of characters that really, you can tell that you love them. You really love these characters as well. How has that changed you?
Well, first I'd say more than anything I've ever made, it turned everything upside down. It showed me that there was some sort of chapter of my life that had ended. It was something about, like, to be a spiritual teacher, you're like explaining. It's like explaining energy. This is how this works. This is the pattern. This is where you see this in history. This is, and this was a completely 100% different kind of experience because it was just being fully present. There were no points to make. Or if I was like, it was just completely foreign in writing this book to think like, well, what do I want people to, what's the meaning of this? I have no idea. I kind of know what this is doing to me. I have no idea if anybody will ever even read it or care, or if what kind of experience other people will have. So there was some sort of surrender to the only way it worked was just sentence by sentence, day by day. What happens next? Who do we meet? What do they say? What are they wearing? What does another character say? So it was like inhabiting something. And it asked for a rule of life. So before I would write for a couple hours in the morning and then go do other work. because I had a much more of an, the intellectual engagement was of a very different nature. But this, I would drop my daughter off from school and go home and start writing, and all of a sudden it was time to pick her up.
Wow.
Wait. It somehow was like being in that world. And then my other work, it's like, oh, well, I got some, I mean, how are we going to pay the bills? So I guess I'll do this over here, and I'll do this at night, and I'll do this on the weekend. And it required this reshuffling because it was so strong and so clear and so joyous that it just like etch-a-sketched in some ways my whole life. And it was the first thing I'd made that I thought, I could talk about this, these characters, I could talk about the story forever. I would love talking to people about this, would be so fun, as opposed to promoting a book.
Yeah.
And other times a book would come out, talk about it for a month, and then on to the next thing. And this was the first thing I ever made that I was, well, the plays, but there was something about it that had this, oh, building this world, telling this story in these different parts, and then talking about it with other people, was almost like a vision for the future. I just haven't ever had that happen like that. Yeah.
That's really awesome.
Let's do that. Yeah, so talking to you today is like, yeah, I'm still sort of baffled and in awe of. It's like so enjoyable. And to hear what you saw in it, and to hear what it spoke to in you, yeah, I love hearing that because it did something to me. It's almost like, I don't know who wrote it. It's just what it did to me. But it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, because when you make great. Something, like when you write something and you put it out in the world, then once it's out in the world, it doesn't belong to you anymore. It's,
uh-huh.
It's out there, it's going to do its own thing, you know.
And, uh-huh.
I've had that with pieces of writing, things that I've published, and I've had no ambitions for them whatsoever. I just put them out there just because, like,
uh-huh.
Then I've got all these people coming back and saying all these things, like, and I wasn't expecting it, and it's just joy, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually going to be speaking of things that spoke to me in the book. There was one of the, I think this is one of the most powerful scenes in the book, actually, for me anyway, was when Teen has the wires taken off his mouth and he's able to talk for the first time. And it's like, I'd imagine this, I'm quite a visual imagination. So I was imagining this, like, say like in a movie scene where it's like, it's built up with all this tension and like it's this big deal, like this serious thing. He's finally going to be able to talk. Like, and then the first words that he says are piddle, piddle, piddle. It's just brilliant, made me laugh out loud. But there was this again, it was like this kind of lightness and heaviness. Like, because I think for me, like with my writing journey, I didn't write for 6 years. I didn't write anything.
Why is that?
And it was... well, I only realized what it was now. I didn't realize what it was at the time. But it's because I think I'd used writing as a way to get approval. That I, when my mother died, I lost my mother, you know, 24 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And writing became a way to get validation, because to replace the validation from that I got from her.
Mm.
So I didn't know. I didn't know this at all. Like, and then when that failed, then I could start grieving properly. And I had this, and I wrote this piece called Death in the Living Room, where, like, finally everything I'd used as security to stop me grieving had gone, including the writing. And I was able to start grieving, and that's when I started to heal and grow and be transformed and, you know, awakened and things. And
wow.
And so all that needed to heal before I was able to write again. And then
what? When did you know that it was time to start writing again?
I think I felt it intuitively. Like, I felt my body was telling me,
mm-hmm.
like it was time. And people that were close to me, like my therapist and close friends, like said, like that they could see something was growing inside of me. Like something was bubbling up.
And when you sat down to type, did the words come?
Yeah.
When you eventually did after 6 years?
Yeah. I mean, I'd written like little bits and pieces, but I hadn't published anything at all. And I'd lost any interest in publishing things, really. And I wrote this thing, that piece I told you about, Death in the Living Room. And I wrote that and I took my time over it. I didn't write it and then publish it like I used to. I took months to write it. And when it was finished, I was satisfied and I put it out there and it got a good response. But to me, it was like what Everything is Spiritual was for you, I think. Like that this is the end of a season. This is acknowledging what I've just been through and saying goodbye to that. And now I'm going to go and write other things I'm ready to write. And that's been quite liberating. And I've discovered a whole new process for writing and it's really good fun and I love it. And I have no ambition to publish anything.
How is the new process different than the old? How are they different?
I think it's the new process is a lot slower. I take my time. I don't rush things. I let ideas marinate a little bit. So I might come up with an idea and open up a draft with a load of ideas, and then I'll just leave it, and I'll come back to it, and then I'll write something, and then I'll leave it and come back to it, and I'll just make it a little bit better and make it, and then I'll know intuitively when it's ready. And it's much more satisfying. It's more enjoyable because it's like I'm more engaged with the process than the result. I'm not thinking about the result anymore. I'm thinking about joy is in the craft, as it were, rather than result. And that's and I found I've got a lot of ideas. I'm trying to figure out what to do with them all. So because people keep telling me I should write a book and all this kind of thing, and I feel like I've got a book brewing up, but I don't know what it is. But it's just joy now, but that moment when he takes when those things come off, it was like that moment when I was finally able to write and publish something again. And it didn't matter what it was; it could be something completely ridiculous, like piddle, 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 but it wouldn't matter because it's me, and it's my voice, and that was what that moment was for me, anyway. In the book, I'm saying.
Wow, that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well, and actually, I kind of felt like it was a metaphor for almost for you in a sense as well. Like, going from Everything is Spiritual and all that part of your life, which was, really significant, and coming into this season where the last few years you've done some, you've made music, which I loved. And you've started doing painting and plays, and it's just a whole different journey. And it's like you were kind of released from something. And not that it was a bad thing that you were released from, but just it was one season to another season where you're just kind of letting yourself embrace yourself, I guess. A different side of yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than to be kind of like, I don't know, Rob Bell in inverted commas, just to be Rob,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like that for sure.
So that's great, yeah. How did you build a relationship? I take it you build a relationship with the characters that you're writing as well. Was it fun getting to know these characters and helping them tell their stories?
Oh my God. I love the characters so much. And I would, as they came to life, I would just be like, I remember coming, I would come in for dinner and I would start telling Kristen about what a character did that day. And she would say, oh my, she'd like, you just want to talk about your characters. You just love. Yeah, I do. And the names, a name is like a portal. It's like once I can see the name, then it's like the way in. And then none of them ever remotely relate to anybody I know. which is super interesting to me. Like, none of them are like, oh yeah, that's my friend so-and-so. They appear to me to be completely out of the blue humans with their own and what they're wearing and the things they say that make no sense and how Heen reacts. Oh yeah.
Heen is
they're alive. They're alive for me in some. Yeah. Oh, they're so alive for me. Mm-hmm. And that was what was so interesting about this is it's like I just haven't ever been a part of something like this where it has a life of its own. And if I could just be with it from here on out, that would just be like, if I could bring this in to the world and follow it around. This was like, sounded like just a one. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'd like to do this. It's almost like I don't know who I was even asking. The universe? Is it okay if I do this? Can I just give myself to this?
Yeah, I mean, I love all that. There's so many characters that I love. That teacher at the beginning, in the class, like I can't remember his name, but
Sir Pong.
Yes, that's it. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I loved him the first minute I read about him. Like, it was his teaching method was just so brilliant. Like, and the character names are brilliant. They're so unique. I just love how completely unique and random they seem. Like, there's no kind of like deep meaning for each of the names. It's just that's their name.
And I was interested in me when I realized, oh, we meet him as a kid. Oh, we're gonna just follow him. Because I knew at some point a guy asked the guy, where'd you park your spaceship? But it starts with these boys in class and, oh, we're going to go the whole way with this guy. Like, this is going to take a while. And I remember right away what kept coming was like, this is a feeling, the feeling of somebody who goes through horrific tragedy and he keeps going and you're with him feeling. And he's numb, so he starts narrating how numb. He doesn't even realize he's numb. And then it's like, oh, if we pick up decades later, and see how numb he's become. I remember this is a plot, and it's a story that happens over a number of laps, also known as years. But it's a feeling of having your heart broken and shutting down. And then ever so gradually coming back to life. But with irritation and anger and fascination and frustration, like when he starts to feel, he doesn't necessarily at first feel universal love for all sentient creatures. He's supernaturally annoyed with Diltud. So he starts to feel and he's like, and then he begins to narrate his own, I think I've been grieving for most of my adult life. Like, that to me just was like so compelling to be in his head as he's witnessing himself.
Yeah.
It touched something. Yeah. Really, really vulnerable within me that. It was like, it just kept asking to be explored.
Yeah. The ungrieved grief. Yeah. That's it. And I could see that. That's something that grief is something that I talk a lot about on this show and in my writing as well. But I'm always on the lookout for that. And I could see it in his story so much. And like that moment near the end where he kind of says ungrieved grief, and I'm like, yeah, that's a thing. Like, we all have that. Like, sometimes we don't realize we have it and it takes us a while to figure it out, but he figures it out, and it's like, and that's the, and then they kind of, I think I can't remember the exact. I'm not going to give away everything, but there's something about that's like the end of the book, but it's the beginning of the story.
Yes,
right. Ooh, yeah, well, and that was like, that's what I felt reading when I read that last kind of bit of the book. It was like, okay, this is the end of this book, but this is just the beginning of the story. I want to see what's next. I want to see where this takes him. Like, I want to see him go through this. I want to see him do this work, like, and, you know, find that freedom and find out who he is. And I want to find out who he really is, because he probably doesn't know yet. And so we're going to find out at the same time he does, which is great. because again, there's like lots of reminders of my own story, like, because I had so much ungrieved grief for a while. And then I finally started grieving, and that was the beginning of my life, really.
Oh, wow.
Well, the life I have now, anyway. So, yeah, it's, yeah. All the best, I think all the best stories have somehow some element of grief in them somewhere. Like, because grief is like, grief can be so powerful, it has such energy to transform us, for good or for bad. I definitely feel that through this story.
When I realized, not often, and several friends I really respect who are in publishing had this, their note was the action in the book really begins when Nunez shows up in his bedroom, like, whatever, 400 pages in. Like, that's actually when the thing really takes off. So either you open the book with a scene like that, like, you got to hook, almost like you got to hook your reader. Otherwise, not much happens and people might just drift off. And I sat with that note. Oh, that's interesting. And I just kept coming back to, no, I'm doing something else here. This isn't about, like, action. This is about this guy and what happens to him. It was even simpler than, oh man, the action really kicks in gear here. It was like, no, we're just going to go with this guy all over the universe. And it'll either be interesting or it won't. It'll either hold your attention or it won't, but at least I know what it is. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Like, you used the word intuitive several times. It had a very, especially when people who with great knowledge that you respect give you a note, it's so easy to be like, yeah. It's like a safety in just going with what they say. But I had this, no, this is something else. This just keeps telling me it's something else. So just trust that. Just trust it and see what happens.
Yeah. And actually, I got a sense of, like, you are still, you're discovering this, you're discovering his journey as much as we are.
I have no idea where this is headed. Even though I do.
Obviously you do. Yeah, you probably, I mean, I'm guessing you've already started writing the second one, and, you know, but I don't know. But I'm looking forward to part two, to book two.
Good. I'm glad you are.
Yeah. There's so many things that could come out of this as well. Like, it feels like there's so many characters in here that I'd like to see more of.
And, oh, good. Good.
In their own stories, you know, because it's
Bobby Freelance. Bobby Freelance might write a self-help book. You never know. On conflict resolution.
Bobby Freelance. I love that.
And the book might be called You Just Got Bobby Freelanced.
Yeah, isn't there some merchandise, like, we just got that on it or something?
There's a t-shirt you can buy that says You Just Got Bobby Freelanced.
Yeah. Absolutely. There was one phrase that I think I bookmarked this. Like, it was something to do with fear. I can't remember, like, which I was like, when I read it, I thought, you've got to make a t-shirt out of that. And I can't remember what it is. And there isn't merchandise about it. There was
messed with the wrong series 5?
No, it was something about, like, something about the mess of life and, like, the chaos, but, like, still being fine or something. I can't remember. Welcome to the chaos. I can't remember. It's near the beginning. I wish I could find it. Like, it's just that's annoying. I thought I bookmarked it because I was gonna share it with you, and I don't think I have bookmarked it. But oh, it's a shame. But oh, it was. But it was. I remember reading it and like, wow, like yeah, I want a T-shirt with that on, and there isn't one available. Like,
well, if you tell me, who knows? We're open to suggestions. So.
When I find it, I'll email you with it and tell you the quote. But it was,
I love it.
It was just so like, yeah, this is absolutely my life. And I should have written it down. I thought I bookmarked it, but obviously not. There's too much stuff to bookmark in the book. There are so many things like that. Though there's loads of paragraphs you're going through like what you think is like a light bit of storytelling, and then suddenly you come to this paragraph where it just all suddenly goes really like, whoa, this is deep and heavy and true. Like this is just true, like in like, you know, in the universe, this is just truth. Like and that happens even near the beginning as well. You know, when he's like discovering about like, you know, the chairs and which is like capitalism almost, like, and you know, when he finds out how people used to live, and he's like, do people actually live like that? You know, like, you know, like people did that, people like didn't, like, you know, people like the people voted for people in who weren't qualified for their jobs and stuff, like why would they do that? Like it's like yeah, why would they do that? You know, but they still do.
Utterly mystified by democracy when he hears about it. He's like, wait, yeah. What? So just anybody can try to get vote? What's a vote? Wait, what's a vote? Anybody can get them. And if you get the most, then you get to be in charge, even if you've never been in charge of anything. Yep. And he's just like, God, that's so dumb. No wonder it didn't work. No wonder it didn't last.
Exactly, right? And now it's falling apart. but that stuff like that. And the thing about the ungrieved grief at the end, like that, just, you know, when he's sitting looking over the sunset. I know it's called something different in the book. Mm-hmm. But, and it's just this like this moment he's talking to
Meunier and Dil Tud, and they're looking, yes. They're in the crater.
That's right. Yeah, the crater. That's it.
Third, and he sees the third.
Yeah, the third. That's it. The third. Yeah, that's what it's called. Like, which is just. And the thing is, I know what you're talking. I know what they are, even though you're using a different word. I know what it means. Like because of the way it's described. So it's like it's brilliant. But so I'm trying to. It's like almost like learning a new language because you're learning new words for things that you already know.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Which is mm-hmm. which I like. I think it's brilliant. But. Kind of like Lord of the Rings, you know, things have their different names, but they're the same.
Yeah.
You know what they are. But yeah, and then he's just talking about this ungrieved grief and starting this new life and taking on the world kind of thing. And it's, yeah, I've had evenings like that where you're just sitting out in the backyard and just reflecting and, you know, thinking about all the things, and suddenly it gets really deep. You know, those late, those kind of deep, meaningful conversations you have late at night with people.
Uh-huh.
Which I love. So, yeah. So where is this going next? What is the next part of this story? Are you like, what is?
Well, I would never talk. I would never talk about that. That's the energy I could spend actually writing it.
Well, I don't need to tell me the story, but I mean, there are going to be more. There's going to be more books, aren't there? Like, there's going to be more.
Yeah.
Of this.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of things. And there were actually lots of Easter eggs that you'll in the future realize were staring you right in the face in book one. That will be part of the fun.
Oh, I love that.
There's always the chance that in the future you'll have to rethink what you saw in book, what you experienced in book one based on what you now know.
Yeah, I love that. That happens in movies as well. I pay attention to every little minor detail when I watch a movie.
Then I'm excited for you to have a good ride in the future.
Yeah, I watch Doctor Who, so I'm always looking for Easter eggs.
Good,
you know, to carry on to the next thing. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to finding them and having to reread the first book to find them all again.
Excellent.
Because I always feel like going back to the first book or movie in a series is when you've seen how the story turns out, it makes it a whole different story. Like,
I think. Yes. You know, there's a Hunger Games prequel just came out, which I and my daughter really wanted to see it. And I was like, I have no need for a prequel for Hunger Games. And then we went, and I could not believe how much I loved it.
Really?
And I know the whole time I knew where it was headed. Like, I knew who that main character becomes. So I already know the ending, and it doesn't matter. It's the same magic trick with like the movie Titanic. You know that thing sinking. So the very thing that we're like, oh man, the reason why you follow a story is you don't know where it's headed. Well, you know it's going to sink. Doesn't matter. So a story, which you think pulls you in because of the suspense, the not knowing, we can actually give you the knowing. And there are just 100 other ways to be utterly compelled. And that, to me, is like, that's one of the reasons why stories are so mysterious, is some of the most basic elements. Like, it's funny to me because I have no training in any of this. So people, like in interviews, will say, oh man, the end of the second act when so-and-so does such and such. And I'll be like, wait, there's a second act in my book? tell me more. Or somebody else. They're like, well, then there was this inciting incident. And I was like, A, what's that? And B, there's one in this book. So I don't have anything in my head about what needs to happen when or what needs to be established. So I just think it's fascinating to learn that there's all this things that you need in a story.
Exactly. I love that because I know about all those different concepts.
Because
I've read a lot about story and how stories work and how, you know, to tell great stories. And like, it ruins movies for me though, because I can always predict what's going to happen. Because I know how story arcs often work.
I do know that lots of movies. You're right. Lots of movies. I'm already like, oh yeah, I get this out. This is going to happen. And I do know that, like, writing this book, I don't have anything in my head about what needs.
That's brilliant.
I don't have any structural. Yeah. Then this is going to have to happen, and then this. I don't. All I have is the scenes. That's fantastic. Actions that characters take and people that we meet and things that all have a sense are going to happen. But in terms of like, I am completely ignorant about what quote unquote has to happen in terms of the mechanics. Don't have any clue. And I'm not even remotely in. Same with my plays. I'm just in awe of people who know all those sorts of things. I'm just 1000% ignorant. And apparently we're going to stay that way.
Yeah, it's the other way, because it's working well for you so far. Like, but you're right. I mean, that whole thing of knowing how it's going to turn out and it's still compelling. I find that in Star Wars prequels, because you know how it's going to end. You know this little boy is going to become this evil villain who kills loads of people. But it's still tragic and it's still sad and you still feel it.
And we're still sucked in and can't look away.
Yeah, like, you know, and it's tragic. It's more tragic because you know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You feel more sad because you're like, because there was a chance to stop this happening. Like, it could have been stopped, but it wasn't. And like, and it's kind of that, it's like grieving almost. Like, you're grieving the fact that, you know, this character's going to end up this way, but they didn't have to end up that way. Like, and that's really powerful. So I might see that Hunger Games movie now, because I didn't watch it for the same reason that you were kind of reluctant to watch it. So I might watch it now.
Yeah, and my daughter was just like, no, we gotta go, it's gonna be great. And I remember I saw part of the trailer and I was like, ugh. And then I kept leaning over to her going, this movie is so good. It's just so good.
Brilliant. Well, This has been brilliant. I really enjoyed this, talking about this
book. Thank you for having me on. It was really delightful to talk to you.
Yeah, same. It's always a delight to talk to you. I'm sure when book two comes out, we'll have you back on. We can have you back on again and talk about that.
All right.
I'm excited to see where this story goes, and I have no idea where it's going to go. And I love that I don't. Like,
good.
It's kind of refreshing that you can't figure out what's going to happen. There's no way, and that's very refreshing. So, yeah. So people can get the book. Where can people get the book?
There's a link on my site, and there's the audio book, and then there's you can get the brown ball poster from the first page, and you can get the first 100 pages you can read for free. And there's a new coffee. Somebody made a Furtis blend of coffee, which is not on Instagram. You can get the info on that. And
that's awesome.
There's a Dill Tud tote bag, and there's a Piddle 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 coffee mug, and there's like a whole world.
I might get that Piddle 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 coffee mug to drink tea when I'm writing. Brilliant. Okay, well, definitely get a hold of this book if you haven't read it already. I highly recommend it. It's so much fun. It's really powerful, and it's long, but it's worth putting your time into it. So highly recommend it.
Great.
And if you don't know Rob's work, robbell.com, go and check out his stuff. There's loads of stuff there. Like any possible thing you could think of to create is probably there. So I think there's music, there's art, there's plays, there's books, there's video stuff, there's talks, it's everything. It's brilliant. So
you're very kind.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so thanks for coming on, Rob, and thanks for listening, everyone.